Welcome to the Philia podcast. Philia means daughter. We are the daughters of the women who came before us, and we fight so that our daughters may be free. We are a women-led volunteer organization. Our vision is a world free from patriarchy, where all women and girls are liberated. We seek to contribute to the women's liberation movement by building sisterhood and solidarity among women, locally, nationally, and globally. By amplifying the voices of women, particularly those less often heard or purposefully silenced, and by defending women's human rights. Our podcast seeks to shed light on some of the most pressing issues facing women and girls around the world. Please take from them what you can. In sisterhood and in solidarity, the Philia team.
Never before has the world seen such a huge increase in the numbers of widows of all ages, from child widows, young mothers, elderly grandmothers, due to armed conflicts, civil wars, natural disasters, and harmful traditional practices when very young girls are married to much older men. And yet there's very little data. They're not counted, and they're not heard, and they are rarely in decision-making, whether it's national, local, or district. This is our big challenge. We've got to hear their voices. Widows are the poorest of all poor women, and they're the most abused because of harmful traditional practices, really deeply entrenched patriarchal prejudices which regard widows. They dehumanize widows, regard them as chattels so that they have no rights, basic rights, choose to marry or not remarry, rights to inheritance, to land, even to custody of their children. And in so many cases, they're either secluded and exploited or excluded and so vulnerable to violence of all kinds from inside their families and from the communities. And also the violence from the international community, the UN and governments, because they are so neglected. And you know, why is it such an urgent issue? Because this oppression of widows affects the whole of society and its future. It's a key driver of girls being taken out of school, either into early marriage to a much older man, or actually given into the clutches of horrible traffickers. It's also a key driver of why we have so many young boys now who are unaccompanied child asylum seekers. So I say that widowhood is an urgent issue for everyone because it's a root cause of expanding and extending the poverty and inequality across the generations. And it's that inequality, that sort of poverty, that injustice that actually fuels future conflicts and actually frustrates all other efforts to achieve the 17 social development goals. So we have to look at new ways. We keep saying drawing attention. But I'm so proud to be introducing my wonderful speakers, and all of you are leading in your own countries that great movement for widows to have a voice. And you've all got such good practice to share. And I wish that in every country where widowhood is a problem, or it will be a problem, they could learn from all of you so that widows have their own organizations and the funding so that they can really, really play their part and be heard in decision-making.
I am Kavita Pandey, Advocate Kavita Pandey, Chairperson of the WHR Nepal. Actually, we had a lot of discriminatory law for women, not only women, widows also. Therefore, we had find out and analyze since the many that our legal document and laws. Then after we filed the writ in the Supreme Court and got that justice for a single woman. Now we have a property right and other many right, and we have got that widow allowances for all the widow. But still we have a lots of discriminatory law, and we want to make that positive toward the single woman widow. And we have been just doing lobbying to the concerned agency of the government and also other just donor and other international community. Therefore, we would like to request here that, yeah, we have to follow the CEDAW and SDCs and other many international mechanism to provide the legal status for the that single woman as other woman and as human being also, as other human being also. Therefore, we have been doing lobbying, we have been doing just advocacy to get a proper and that a positive law for us.
I'm going to introduce you to my longtime friend and colleague, Lily Sapa, who's the founder in Nepal of Women for Human Rights Single Women's Group. Lily was only 29 when her husband was killed, leaving her to bring up alone three small boys. And though she was highly educated, you know, and very well established in the society, she still experienced all the realities of widowhood in Nepal and was also the victim of appalling, harmful traditional practices in mourning and burial rites. And because of that, in 1994, she began to join up with other young widows and set up this amazing, one of my very best partners in the world, Women for Human Rights Single Widows Group. She wouldn't even use the word widow in her title, because in the vernacular, as in many other countries, the word widow is synonymous with witch, harlot, prostitute, whore. But what she did for millions of widows all over the world and the thousands of widows in Nepal, she has given them hope, given them a voice, and given them empowerment, and enabled all over the world widows to share best practice. And what she has done in her organization is some very good practice indeed that we can all learn from on. So she helped all these widows, and she's also helped me. Welcome, Lily. Thank you.
Well, I'm Lily Thapa. I'm the founder of Women for Human Rights Nepal, which worked for the rights of the widows from last two decades. In Nepal, we have among 8% widows among the 52% women population, where majority of the widows are young, in between 25 to 35 years, having 3 to 4 children in an average. As per the census, 86% of the widows in Nepal are totally illiterate. That's why they are dependent on the family members, where they get all kinds of the sexually and the physically harassed and the abuse. Majority of the widows in Nepal work in the informal sector. That is why during the time of the COVID, they are the one who are the worst hit, where they get job and employment opportunity. As being a sole supporter of their family, their role has to be acknowledged by all, and they should get all kind of the resources to support their family. And widows, as being a sole supporter of their family, their role has to be acknowledged, and the international community has to incorporate the widowhood in their agenda. The triple burden the widows have to contain are in the form of the stigma associated with the widowhood, makes them one vulnerable population among all. State and the international community needs to address the issues of the widowhood in keeping with the form and the spirit of CEDAW and SDG, as mentioned, that no one be beheld. That's why widows of Nepal and around the world demand justice, that love and dignity.
So I'm really, really proud to introduce to you my great friend, my beautiful young widow, Jacqueline, who runs Ifesi. She runs this organization for women in difficult circumstances. And she comes from Eastern Congo, from Kabul, where there are just so many widows. I heard in the Congo that they say that over 60% of the women in the Congo are now widows because all of these terrible conflicts, and so many widows who are also victims of rape have been displaced or in refugee camps and living in such poverty. Jacqueline, over to you.
Je m'appelle Jacqueline Musugani. Je suis coordinatrice de IFCD, Initiative des femmes en situation difficile pour le développement durable et intégré. Si je peux bien traduire en anglais, IFCD, c'est Women's Initiatives in Difficult Situations for Sustainable and Integrated Development. IFCD est basée à l'est de la République démocratique du Congo. Et ces pays où tout l'Est est pullule des groupes armés. Donc, du nord au sud, c'est-à-dire toute la moitié du pays est envahie par une centaine de groupes armés qui sont très actifs pendant 25 ans. Depuis 1996, cette situation désastreuse continue à faire des millions de morts, des victimes de viols et violences parmi les femmes et les filles et qui subissent des viols et violences, et des milliers de déplacés vivant dans des conditions très critiques et précaires. Dans ces situations désastreuses et catastrophiques, les veuves et les orphelins se comptent par milliers. On compte près de 50% des veuves par rapport à la population totale à l'est de la République démocratique du Congo. IFCD travaille depuis plus de 23 ans pour la promotion des droits des femmes, plus particulièrement les veuves. Nous menons des plaidoyers pour la reconnaissance des droits des veuves qui ont besoin de bénéficier sans violence à l'héritage de leurs défunts maris, des logements décents, des soins de santé, de la scolarité de leurs enfants devenus orphelins. Nous travaillons avec 750 veuves. On pourrait identifier plusieurs veuves, mais on ne peut pas parce qu'on est capable d'accompagner et tant soit peu 750 veuves. Les veuves ont également besoin de soutien pour l'apprentissage des métiers, pour leur autonomisation économique. Tous ces droits devraient être garantis pour les veuves et leurs orphelins. Il fait du travail sans relâche pour tout cela. Il y a une loi qui protège les victimes de viols et violences faites aux femmes et aux filles et qui a été votée. Les auteurs commencent à être traduits en justice, mais la mise en application de cette loi souffre de clientélisme et de trafic d'influence, alors que la prise en compte particulière des droits des veuves et des orphelins n'est pas encore en actualité en République démocratique du Congo. Les veuves continuent à vivre dans l'ombre des femmes mariées dont les maris sont encore vivants. C'est une catégorie sociale des oubliés dont les droits ne sont pas encore effectivement pris en compte. Dernièrement, début avril 2023, avec Margaret Owen de Widow for Peace from Democracy, qui était venue de Londres, nous nous sommes rencontrés à Kinshasa, capitale de la République démocratique du Congo, et nous avons été reçus par la ministre nationale des genres, familles et enfants, pour solliciter l'organisation d'un forum régional pour les droits des veuves. Mais jusque-là, le projet reste toujours en veilleuse. Donc, le forum n'a pas été organisé. Bon, le projet reste encore là. Nous allons continuer à lutter avec Margaret et tout le monde qui sont acquis aux droits des veuves pour que le forum international des droits des veuves soit organisé en République démocratique du Congo. C'est très important compte tenu de la situation et des guerres qui sévissent en République démocratique du Congo. Au nom de toutes les organisations de veuves dans le monde, au nom de toutes les militantes et tous les militants qui lutte pour le respect des droits des veuves et des genres. Je remercie beaucoup l'ONU à travers l'ONU Femmes, qui a pris en compte les souffrances des veuves et des orphelins et qui ont travaillé dur pour faire voter une résolution pour le respect des droits des veuves. Pour accompagner cette résolution jusqu'à sa mise en application dans chaque pays respectif, nous souhaiterions que cet organe des Nations Unies puisse encore rassembler des voix et moyens pour organiser des assises au niveau international auxquelles pourraient participer les délégations des organisations de veuves et des différents pays membres des Nations Unies, les délégations des États membres et les donateurs, ainsi que tous les acteurs et parties prenantes qui sont acquis aux droits des veuves et des orphelins dans le monde. Que les grandes structures du monde qui ont dans leur cahier de charges le droit de regard sur les veuves, les organisations de veuves, les droits des veuves, puissent entrevoir comment, au moins une fois les 3 ans, organiser un forum international en présentiel, par exemple, de tous les acteurs, c'est-à-dire les représentants des organisations des droits des veuves, les délégations, représentations et les délégations qui représentent les veuves, identifiées dans des différentes organisations œuvrant pour la promotion des droits des veuves, et les orphelins dans les différents pays membres des Nations Unies, ainsi que tous les acteurs et parties prenantes acquis à la promotion et protection des droits des veuves et des orphelins. Tous ces partisans, tous ces participants à ces événements pourraient exprimer de vives voix durant quelques jours d'éventuels forums, des préoccupations, des plaidoyers, bref, les préoccupations générales liées aux droits des veuves. À ces éventuelles occasions de participation au forum présentiel de promotion, des propositions claires, s'il vous plaît, des propositions claires et concrètes seraient faites à qui des droits, accompagnées des suivis et des évaluations à travers des points focaux choisis parmi les représentants des organisations des droits des veuves participant au dit forum. Les étatiques ne pourraient être tenues au courant qu'en termes de plaidoyer. Pour y arriver, l'ONU pourrait nous aider à saisir le gouvernement des pays membres pour cette fin. Quant à une action pratique de base et réalisable qui peut être entreprise par un individu, c'est comme je viens de le dire si haut qu'il faudrait choisir les points focaux par pays pour qui pourrait organiser de fortes sensibilisations des organisations des droits des veuves qui travaillent à la base afin de multiplier des plaidoyers pour amener le gouvernement à voter quand même une loi de reconnaissance et de protection des droits des veuves. Cette loi protégerait les veuves et les orphelins de tout genre de violations massives de leurs droits. Pour finir, une action pratique et réalisable qui peut être entreprise par les politiciens, les rédacteurs politiques et les membres du pouvoir judiciaire. À concevoir et rédiger un texte de loi de protection des droits des veuves et des orphelins à faire passer à la chambre basse et à la chambre haute du Parlement jusqu'à la présidence de la République afin que les droits des veuves soient reconnus vraiment et respectés. Je vous remercie, c'est Jacqueline, et coordinatrice de l'IFECIDI basée en République démocratique du Congo. Merci.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. I hope that's really, really good. And I hope it can get translated so that everybody will be able to hear it next October. And now we'll have, who shall we have next? Rosaline. Maybe we'll go straight, keep you in Africa still. So Rosaline, my wonderful Rosaline, who I first met at LSC when you came to London for the very first time. What a great meeting that was. And you're the first widow's leader I know about who really came out in the open and took the blanket of invisibility of the appalling, harmful traditional practices that nobody ever wanted to speak about. And you, with such courage, you exposed what was really happening to the world. And I hope the world is listening to you now. Rosaline.
Thank you, Margaret. My name is Rosaline Orua, founder and director of the Rona Foundation that is working with the rural widows in Western Kenya. And for the first time, we thank the FILIA for giving us this platform
as widow representatives, widow leaders from the Global South, to get our voices included. And the problem we are dealing with at our organizational levels, besides the fact that we are dealing with HIV perished communities, COVID-19 perished communities, which COVID was a widow maker. More widows came more women came to become widows in COVID-19. And we are also dealing with the burden of orphan care. And more importantly, in my context where I work in Western Kenya, we are dealing with the harmful widowhood practices, traditions and the customs that deny women their body autonomy, deny them their dignity, and deny them the choice and voice over their own bodies and their rights. And with it comes a disinheritance, with it comes discrimination, and with it comes a social stigma. In the context of where I work, a husband is a layer of protection with whom a woman loses her social status. Immediately, the moment the husband is declared dead, then you have to deal with all the elements that come with widowhood, whether they're primary effects or then secondary. So grief is is not close to what is being discussed. She will be dealing with the people known to her, mostly in-laws who will want to disinherit her. We had talking about women who largely did not get the opportunity. Even as we sit here in this webinar, we are the luckiest ones because of education. You can read documents, you can defend your rights, you can speak English. A number of the widows we serve in Nakuru, 90% of the 8,000 widows my organization serves, can't read and write. So they can't even interpret documents when they're being disinherited. And we are talking about digital platforms inequalities. We are here using the technology now. Most of those widows will not be able to have access. So we come here representing a number of those millions and millions of widows across the globe, 12 million widows in Kenya in particular, whose data is unknown, they are not evidence, and there's nothing for us without us. If the data doesn't exist, it means the issue doesn't exist. If harmful widowhood practices are not criminalized and outlawed, it is the women are not present even in legislation. So those are the issues we are dealing with at an organizational level. And luckily, what the Rona Foundation is doing, if I look keenly now with a more clearer eye, we are talking about dignity and human rights purely. And sometimes they say, oh, these are traditional African practices. In my opinion, no. These are structural and systemic inequalities that affect women that are widowed. And they could affect women from Congo, where there's war now, from South Sudan, where there has been war, from Ukraine, where there is war, from Kenya, where there are, you know, there's traditions and the customs that deny women their rights. They could affect Congo women in the Ethiopia, where there is conflict now. They're all over Asia, millions and millions of widowed women who never got the chance and the opportunity we have now to get our voices heard. And we have hope in the people listening to us that they'll do something with this information, and that something will translate to laws, legislation, will translate to resourcing widowhood. And we'll also talk to recognition of the widow issues at a global level. The changes that I am seeing in Kenya, Rona Foundation is 12 years old now. And we've had a lot of advocacy efforts through Widows for Peace, through democracy. And Margaret has been a great pillar. And she has kept on telling us, don't shut up. Keep talking. And ideally, we have kept talking. And sometimes we are talking to ourselves and still we kept talking. What I've noticed in Kenya in the last 5 years, especially now we have a new government, in the last government, we advocated very strongly for the establishment of economic empowerment instruments. We got two widows economic and empowerment instruments passed and launched by the national government, one at a national government level, which is national, and one at an organization level, that organization and claimed as authority is also national. The challenge therein is access. The new government has brought in a policy that all those economic instruments have to be accessed through digital platforms. So now we are talking about digital inequalities. In my work, we serve about 8,000 widows clustered in 106 groups. So we are looking at, do we buy them phones, go to them and educate them and get somebody to help them and a field officer to help them access those facilities. So still access, recognition, services, public service delivery, still limited to the widows in that context. In increased knowledge, especially amongst community members and duty bearers. Lately, I have seen the wife of our deputy president advocating strongly against recognition and legislation of widow issues in our country. In my own county, my governor, who's a human rights lawyer, has come out very strongly in a number of occasions and has agreed that we are going to enact a widow's protection policy. And that is a male champion, a legislator standing in the front of it, saying, let's promote and advance widow rights. Such did not exist before. So those give me hope. I've also seen the recognition with other stakeholders, whether they are media influencers, social media influencers, coming up and saying there's something about widowhood that is not right. We could look at it and we could legislate around it. Our ask here, especially to widows, women's movement like the Filia, is what can they do for us? And we thank you for creating this space to allow us get our voices out there. We really thank you for creating for us this space. Offering us such platforms to increase awareness help us to also get visibility and get the widow issues at the global plan. One more thing is collaborative and partnership efforts. Taking joint actions with us so that we don't remain as widow-led organization or widow-focused organization, taking advocacy actions on our own or writing opinion pieces. You could join us as women organization to help us take joint actions. Together, we are stronger. And lastly, I think it is upon all of us women of the world, to call for policy legislation to outlaw harmful traditional widowed practices, just like they did with female genital mutilation. The only difference is we have our stories, and our stories are the only tool that we have to speak. In my case, on the fourth day after they buried my husband, they came to sexually cleanse me. And the only proof I have is because I was there, I was in the room. Despite the daughter of a teacher, being the daughter of teachers, they still came to sexually cleanse me on the fourth day after they buried my husband. My voice should count for many other widows that did not have the luxury for their father-in-laws to defend them like father-in-law did. So that if we outlaw and criminalize, then we protect women from posterity. We are the widows of today, changing it for the widows of the future. Thank you.
You are absolutely amazing. Fantastic. I love what you've done and the way you actually got the governor in your part of Kenya to actually put it onto the legislative program. This is absolutely wonderful. And I love what you said about joining up. So we're joining up with all sorts of other women, human rights organizations, women's organizations. So we're many, many of us, and not just women, but actually supported by lots of serious men who understand how urgent this issue is with the future of all our communities and all our societies. Thank you so much, Rosalind. Wonderful to hear you. And now I'm going to ask Olga Ludmila from Ukraine. And all our hearts bleed for all of you because we don't know how many women, not just a widow, how many of them are now refugees in different countries. Many of them are here in the UK, but how many women don't even know where their husbands are? They've become what we call the hearth widows, haven't they? They're in limbo. They don't know whether their husbands are in mass graves, are they being taken to Russia, are they in prison? Where are they? And the terrible impact of that on their children and their families. And so we want to hear from you about what you want all of us to do and what you want the international community to do to help you all. Because the war in your country, alas, oh alas, it's not going to be over soon. And although it is terrible what is happening in Ukraine, we've got to understand that it's terrible what is happening for all those women in Russia who've lost their husbands. Everywhere where there is conflict, who bears the brunt of it all? men and boys are killed, and women are widowed, raped, and really suffer with terrible vulnerability to more and more violence. Thank you, Ludmila.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you, because we met in Geneva 3 years ago, and you watch a film about widows villages, Chernihiv villages, and but in this time, no very very most very difficult aggressive, but now we have another situation, and our situation is not good, but we hope the we win. Thank you. I thought about Ukrainian widows, and widows had different roles in Ukraine in different historical eras. The widows continued the affair of their husband during the era of princely rule in Kiev Rus. For example, Princess Olga ruled in the 10th century AD for 19 years after the death of her husband, Prince Ihor. Widows were the basis of settled towns and villages during the Cossack era, 15th to 16th centuries. Widows have been rebuilding Ukraine after long wars, in which their husband died over the past 100 years. As a rule, in those days, women gave birth to many children who started working early and helped the family. Technological progress has changed the situation. It became prestigious for the family to give children a good and long-term education, and raising children becomes so expensive that most families today are limited to one or two children. Also, educated working women postponed having children for the sake of a career. Therefore, a modern widows in Ukraine, especially women whose husband died in the war with the Russian aggressors, often remain children. This is the first big challenge we have received. Unfortunately, I do not have exact date on the number of such widows, but there are tens of thousands of them. The state has developed a program to support the families of those killed during the war. Each region additionally has its own programs, but widows often face misunderstanding on their situation, delay in financial aid. Public organizations in Ukraine provide free legal support, but having lost her husband, a woman can no longer give birth to a child from him. There are widows who, having the husband biological material, became pregnant and gave birth to a child already after the husband's death, but such units. Therefore, we raised to issue before the state about creating a sperm bank of young men, especially military personnel, and not only. But such a step would not be effective if we do not convince widow to give birth to children through the mass media and social networks. Widows of heroes must become heroines and nurture the genetic code of the nation. Of course, this is impossible without the protection and support of the state. The state needs to defend its land and then settle it. But women's organizations need to take care of it now. I became a widow at the age of 34. My husband was a doctor and died in a road accident during a night call. I have two sons, 11 and 5 years old, and I dreamed to giving birth to a daughter. At that time, there were no modern reproductive technologies, which I always regretted very much. I think many widows had the same feelings, wanting to continue their husband's genetic code. Widows have a lot of oncology and mental breakdowns. Many die. Children are left alone. Widows in Ukraine have a large element of burnout. Widows are required to collect certificates in order to receive financial support. There are no clear instructions on where to take them. In different regions, the region itself decided how much they can give to a widow. It can be a small amount. If war widows take children from orphanages and do not want to remarry, state support is needed. The role of non-governmental organization is to advocate the right of the most vulnerable section of the population, including widows. But you can disagree with this. If a widow was left alone in her young, raised children, was their father and mother, i.e. performed a double burden. She is not a victim. She is a leader. Some of the widow of defenders of Ukraine joined the armed forces after the death of their husbands. They are heroines, leaders. In Ukraine, the organization Widows of Heroes was created. Women have closed chat rooms, communicate among themselves. But this a place to the capital and large cities. In small towns and villages, there are not such organizations. And women's public organization take care of war widows to a greatest or lesser extent in the same way they took care of older widows. Older widows are a natural tradition of Ukraine, in which girls often marry older boys and the life expectancy of men is 10 years shorter than women. Therefore, women 60 plus are often widows. And if young widows have a chance to get a second marriage, although in Ukraine it is often called treason, or to adopt a child from an orphanage, I am not talking about the possibility of getting biological material of one's or husband, then all the widows are completely invisible. And also many of them have a good education and high potential. They are not registered anywhere in the statistical authorities, and neither the state nor the public have any prospects for the group of women. I appeal to your experience and ask you to include Ukrainian widows in your activities. In turn, at the next Congress, which we plan to hold by the end of this year, we will rise to issue of creating a committee of widows in the National Council of Women of Ukraine. Also, I, as the Vice President of the European Center of International Council of Women, will ask questions about the creating of the committee of widows at the International Council of Women at the Assembly in the Philippines in November. After all, there are much more widows in every country and in the whole world than most marginalized group, and they have their own needs and opportunities. And we have the opportunity to make this group of women visible and use their potential to stabilize the economic, political, ecological, and psychological situation in the world. Thank you for your attention.
Oh, thank you, Ludmila. And you spoke about a whole lot of things we hadn't thought about, which pertains a particular to Ukraine as well. When you actually spoke about these women who really want to, yes, have their babies from their dead husbands, so go on, and this idea of having that whole sperm bank so that they could actually go on to have children through that with, and the biological father is that dead husband. We haven't ever spoken about that before. And that's a particular issue perhaps in Ukraine, where already so many women, particularly educated women, were having fewer and fewer children because it was so incredibly difficult to combine your career with childcare and having children. So you do have something we hadn't even thought about before. Thank you so much for all of that. And also what I love what you said is that we must stop thinking of widows all the time exclusively as victims, but see them, as you said, as great leaders on every area and every aspect of life, whether it is about peace accords, whether it's about the climate crisis, saving the planet, about COVID, because we know that COVID made many, many widows. More men died in every country from COVID than women. Wherever it is, I love what you said about saying widows are leaders. Don't always see them all the time as victims. Thank you so much. And I'm interested that there's this conference in the Philippines with the International Council of Women. So we've got to be sure that we get that on the agenda. And also our Widows Peace and Democracy, the Widows Charter, which we did, first of all, set up with the International Council of Women. So thank you very, very much. We will work on that to see if we can get a presence there. And now I'm not sure now. Have we got South Sudan here, Alice?
It's just very special to have Agor with us today. She's the founder of the Women's Support Network Organization in South Sudan. We are incredibly fortunate that you are able to attend today, knowing how fragile life is and how The environment in which you're living makes it difficult to talk at events like this, but we feel very privileged and honoured that you are with us. So I'll be quiet now. And Agor, please educate us all on widowhood in South Sudan.
All right. Thank you so much for the chance. My name is Agor Mabior. I'm from South Sudan. I'm one of the founders of the Women Support Network, WASNU. First, let me introduce WASNU. WASNU started as a small group of women, young women, who lost his husband in a very early age of marriages. And then we used to gather and we comfort ourselves and we address our issue privately. Most of the 10 women, they were educated and they were working. But we realized that there's some widows who they are not educated and they have a low level of education that need help and support. First of all, South Sudan have a very huge number of widows. Roughly 60 to 70% of widows due to the civil war and other factors that cause to this. So therefore, we sat as a group and we decided to form an organization called WASNU, Women Support Network. The idea from WASNU was to empower widows, those who are not educated, to train them, to provide for them small tools that they can able to provide small needs, basic needs to their families. And then counseling as well, because, you know, one of the things that we face when you lose your husband, mentally, you cannot be okay. Therefore, Women Support Network was founded last year, March. I think we are a baby organization, but we are on. Yeah. The idea is to network some jobs. Sometime I can have a chance of a cleaner, something like a small that any woman can do. So we cannot work them to this because some they don't have that ability even to know where to go. Other things also, as I said earlier, it's counseling as well. Partly is for advocating for women rights, especially in the court of law. We have two lawyers who are one of the founders. One of the challenges that we face in South Sudan, there is no clear article for us as widows. I think my sister from Kenya, she mentioned so many things that maybe we share, that we are commonly sharing it, that whenever you lose your husband and you're still young, your in-laws treat you like, you know, you're just let me say, produce machine, like you should be just, you know, continue what the journey your husband left. Like you need to have more babies from your brother-in-laws and either you like him or you don't. And if you did not accept this, so many things, you face challenges, let me say it this way, which is most of widows in South Sudan are facing it. So the extent, you may not get something for your kids to have, like eat, go to school. You can be chased from the house. I'm one of those things who felt like being chased from my house. But the good thing that I was able to have another house for my own. So those are the things that we really face. Another thing that we face as an organization, when we formed this organization, we got negative impact from the society itself. They thought that we are going to be against the law completely. Like, why are they doing it this? What they want to do? So they want to help our woman to, you know, to be able to reject all the traditional and culture that been there from, I think, 100 years. So those are the things we really face. And then second to it that, we have a problem with articles, as I said earlier. Whenever that you are married, in our culture, even though your husband is gone, you have to be there, continuing your marriages with your brother-in-law. If you rejected that, it will be another problem. And if you go to the court, there's no article that are clear to save you or to help you to do so. You will be referred to civil court, which is we do nothing. In fact, will add more challenges and problems into your life. Currently, I lost my husband 4 years ago. I cannot say the divorce, because a divorce, it should be from my partner. But I'm not known. I'm just like this, you see. Because if I go to the court now, I cannot get chance, or I will not be allowed to be free, at least to start my life again, to remarry again, or to what to do again. So those are the challenges. So I'm happy that to have a platform like this where our voice will be here globally. Maybe I will get more help, so we'll get more chances at least to express what exactly we are facing through. But what I would say that, you know, if one of the things that we want to work on it is the article. Second to it is to empower our widows. If I'm strong, I can work, because I said that a strong woman, a strong community. If I am able to provide a meal or a basic need to my kids, no one can violence me. No one. But if I'm not, I will accept everything for the sake of my kids. I don't want to take much time. Thank you so much. I hope I summarize all the challenges that we are facing. Thank you so much.
Oh, that was incredible. Thank you so much. All the things that you spoke about, I mean, just broadening as well. And you talked about the leveret, when the widow in so many countries, not just in South Sudan, is expected to go on having children in the dead husband's name through the brother-in-law. And this is rape, it's rape, it has to be called rape. And then also you talk about the impossibility in so many countries, not just in yours, of widows being able to access the justice system. The whole corruption and patriarchal corrupt nature of the very justice system and the courts and the powerful people that you're against, and the very idea that if you actually try to make an effort to go to the court and speak about what your husband's family have done to you, then you're only risking exposing yourself to even more violence. But just shows how what you speak about and you talk about in South Sudan, it's the common lot of widows in so many, so many countries. And there are just so many of us, so many of us. And we have got to really, I think we're coming to the end of this program now, Michelle, and maybe we can get Lily Sapa added at a later time. But really, I'm so grateful. We are all grateful to Philia for giving us this opportunity. And again, I repeat Rosalind's question. When you show this webinar at your big meeting, I think comes from Glasgow in October, what do you think? Who is going to see it? Because what we really want now, we want widowhood now really prioritized on all the agendas, whether it's the UN or governments or other big international NGOs, whether it's Oxfam or Plan International. There's so many big NGOs, women's NGOs, who are still not really giving a voice to widows. And I also like what Rosalind was talking about, and others of you, that we really want to see criminalized. Those acts that take away from widows their rights as human beings, and that those people who are the perpetrators of these acts that so harm widows, take away their rights, actually physically, mentally, verbally, economically,
sexually abuse them should be prosecuted. And that's what we want eventually. We want all these this to be made criminal. I think I've got to stop now, but I now want to just say that wherever, whatever we're talking about, whether we're talking about harmful traditional practices, and it is shocking that in all the meetings I've been to at the CSW with the United Nations Fund for Population Activities, UNFPA, they talk about female genital mutilation, FGM, or child marriage and utensils, but they will never, never, never talk about harmful traditional practices and mourning and burial rites that widows suffer. So this is a scandal. It's a violence against us, even by a UN entity. So we want, wherever there's any talk about, whether it's about COVID, because maybe there's more COVID coming back, whether it's about the climate crisis, whether it's about peace building and the ending of conflict, we've really got to be sure that widows are heard, that they are in the room, and that is what we want. And thank you, all of you. You've been absolutely marvellous. I feel, humbled to try and even
Margaret,
conclude what you said, but thank you very much indeed.
Margaret, can I just ask one moment? We have Fatma here, who had asked if she might just, because we've got so many speakers, if she could...
Oh, wonderful. Fatma, I met Fatma when I was in Sri Lanka. And I'm thrilled that you're here, Fatma, because in Sri Lanka, again, we coined the phrase half-widows. Not only are there over 40,000 missing men, but there are over 100,000 Tamil war widows, but there are over 30,000 half-widows. And many of the babies that were born of rape who end up in orphanages, that's true in the Congo, in so many countries. What happens to the babies who are born of these rapes? And again, what is happening right now to the Tamil widows, to the Muslim widows in Sri Lanka? Can Fatma, over to you. Wonderful that you're here. Thank you.
The problem I was going to say is the widows in Sri Lanka, as Margaret told, there are 89,000 altogether. And in the north and east, there are about 50,000 who are the minority Tamils. And they belong mainly to the fishing folk, their fishing folk community. So those people are already marginalized by society, but with becoming widows, the stigma is more stronger and the support structure is not there. So they are now finding difficult, extremely difficult, struggling to feed their children and themselves. And some have gone into the bad service of prostitution, which is really alarming. That's one way of earning for them. That's terribly disheartening. Nobody will think. So it is necessity, and they have extended families as well. It's not only the widow and the children, it's the mother-in-law, the father-in-law, brother-in-law, everybody involved. So how can they survive? And in the meantime, half of the widows, though they are widows, because they don't know where their husband is, they are disappeared, forced disappearance. So they want to know where they are, and they are protesting for the last 10 years. And the Office for the Missing Personality or whatever, person have never replied anything to them. So what can we do as an international organization to put pressure on the OMI or whatever to find out what happened to those widows whose husbands are missing? And the other thing is, economically, all these fisher folk should be helped. They are very, very struggling too much, I would say. And the children also now begging on the street. The climate in Sri Lanka is now very bad at the moment. That's all I can say, but if anybody can contribute to the pressure, that would be great.
Thank you so much. And I understand that there also the militarization in that part of Sri Lanka, in the north, where there's so many soldiers and so many police, and the widows are losing their land. And
yeah, it's already lost. They lost all their lands and belongings. That's why they are going onto the street.
And then they, when they try and go and find out what happened to their missing husbands, they then they meet terrible violence. They've even, widows have even been raped by the police.
Yep.
You know, threatened. And we find that in so many countries, the same in Kashmir, when the women there try to find out from the police, are their husbands in prison? Are they in a mass grave? Where are they? Because there's no closure for them. And we often say, wretched as it is for widows, in, it's terrible to be a half widow because there's never any closure and you're in a sort of legal limbo. I think probably we've now got to stop now, Michelle, haven't we? Because we've gone over the time. And I am so grateful, again, I say, to Philia for giving this opportunity. And we hope that it will be seen all over the world.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. We're incredibly grateful to all the women who donate their time and their effort to create this podcast. That includes our guests, our interviewers, and our editors. You can find us on your favorite listening platforms like Apple, Stitcher, and Spotify. Just search for Philia Podcast. Please help us reach even more women. You can do that by subscribing to our show, by sharing this podcast with your friends, with your family, and with your coworkers, and by leaving us a positive rating and review. Philia organizes the largest annual grassroots feminist conference in Europe. We would love to see you there. You can support our work by joining the Friends of Philia scheme, by giving a solidarity ticket so that even more women can join our conference, and by subscribing to our newsletter. Please take a look around our website, philia.org.uk, to find out more. Together, women make magic happen, and we can't wait to be in touch with you.